What's up, Capeside Crusaders? Welcome to Freaks and Creeks, a Dawson's Creek podcast, the show where four millennials who missed the boat 25 years ago take the dive for the first time. Join us as we experience the series with a fresh perspective and see if our adolescent experiences match up with Dawson and the gang. My name is Cody.
I'm Stella.
I'm Mallory.
And I am James. And this week we are talking about Season 2, Episode 21, Ch-ch-changes. But before we do that...
Ch-ch-changes.
Boop-a-dee-dee-bop. Okay, so in Capeside Correspondence News, we got an email for our dear friend Leaf.
Hey, Leaf.
What's up, Leaf?
Did he tell us that he identifies as
he? I think he said he.
Okay.
Hee-hee. We got MJ on the line.
Come on!
Wow. Capeside is filled with ghosts, huh?
All right.
Oh my God, MJ, settle down.
The man in the mirror.
I love Dawson. I love Johnny.
Oh my God, MJ. Who's your favorite character?
I love Pacey. I love Andy. The love is so sweet.
Oh my God.
You're little such baby Alexander.
Oh, MJ. Do you really love baby Alexander?
Yeah, I like that he had the blanket over his head this episode.
Oh, that is true. Did it remind you of your son?
No, that's so sweet.
Oh my God. He disappeared. Oh, I could see him in the sky. He's waving down at us. Wow. Bye, MJ.
Thank you. First celebrity appearance. Maybe second? I don't know.
Can't keep track.
It's so many. Sorry, Stella.
It's okay. What's going on? That was a special... special moment. Okay, Leaf says, "Hey, freaks! Regarding Joshua Jocks,
Joshua Jocks,
Joshua Jackson,
Arnold Schwarzenegger."
I think I was like skipping ahead in my head of saying Jonathan Vandermeek.
Can I combine their names?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So regarding Joshua Jackson and James Vandermeek. They did apparently hate each other for much of the show's run, but have since patched things up as they fairly regularly like each other on Instagram. The full details aren't really known, however. This is what has been speculated. They were roommates, and that caused typical roommate conflict. I've heard one of them was really messy and the other really clean. Also, very early, Jonathan Vandermeek and Katie Holmes went on a date or two. Oh, I did Jonathan, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I didn't even mean to do that.
Saying it wrong is just funny. Yeah.
They went on a date or two, nothing serious. But then she had a serious relationship with Joshua Jackson. She still refers to him as her first love.
Wow.
Wowie.
I can't believe this is real. I had no idea. This is so exciting. FYI, I am Hot Capicola on Instagram.
What's up?
Leaf.
What do we think Katie and Jonathan did on their date?
Talked about movies?
Yeah.
Just what we see in Dawson's Creek. They got on a tiny little boat. Oh, they shook it up around town. He talked at her about his interests. And then she went to Joshua Jackson.
Showed him his
jet boat.
Ooh, yeah. Wait, jet boat.
Jet ski.
Jet skis, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll get to that in a second. But who do we think was the really messy one? Yeah. Who was the clean one?
That's what I was wondering.
I bet, I don't know, Joshua Jackson
was the
messy one. Oh. I feel like he was messy.
Absolutely.
That's kind of what my gut tells me, too.
I feel like Jonathan Vandermeek is like such a type A clean freak. Yes. Like, I bet he was very tidy.
I mean, if you look at his Instagram, him and his family dress like a cult. They're all wearing like these like flowy white costumes. Yeah. Their house is probably pristine. No shoes in the house kind of way. Like, really intense. You're grounded for a fucking month.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the vibe. And I feel like Joshua Jackson's too cool for school. He's like, yeah, whatever, man. Yeah. I'll do the dishes next month. And he slams a beer can on his forehead and crunches it and he throws it behind him. He puts on sunglasses, gets on his motorcycle. No safety belt there. Mm-mm. Too cool.
I feel like Jonathan Vandermeek probably like... put lines and tape in the apartment and he was like, it's got to be clean over here. Anything past this line, I will burn.
Dang, that's pretty wild that they were like a little triangle.
But would Lupita Nyong'o date a messy boy?
Well, that was when he was young. Now he's a grown-up man, he's and learned. He knows yeah. what to do.
Mm. He's a grown-up man.
Or he pays people to clean for him.
Yeah, that too. So connected, well, thank you, Leaf.
Thanks, Leaf.
For this
Thanks, Leaf.
Little tidbit. This is fun to discuss and speculate over. We got a comment that is also kind of connected to these speculations on Instagram from Unhoochie. Unhoochie says, I was obsessed with The Creek when it was on, so I read everything I could about the cast. Joshua Jackson and James Vanderbeek were roommates as soon as they moved to North Carolina. They spent a ton of time together, bought jet skis or a boat, hung out on weekends. Then, there was a bit of a love triangle jealousy happening offset. Then the show shifted storylines, so one of the actors was getting more screen time than before and more than the other one. Teen drama. They seem to be on better terms now, maybe, or play nice in public, but their personalities, core belief systems, and life choices are complete opposites.
It's also good evidence that Joshua Jackson is probably cool as hell in real life because James John Vanderbeek is like an anti-vaxxer, right?
Oh, is he?
I can't remember. Oh. That sounds kind of familiar, but I don't know if that's accurate.
I'm pretty sure him and his wife were peddling like vaccines create autism stuff on social media like 10 years ago. And then now I'm pretty sure he was like, don't want the Rona shot, not letting the government tell me what to put in my body kind of vibe. Plus he's in a cult, so.
Yeah, family cult, family style.
Or he's in the Polyphonic Spree.
It's hard to tell. I wouldn't be surprised if he started a family band.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
All I know about Jonathan Vanderbeek is that he was in the B in apartment 23 or whatever, and everybody loved that he did this kind of self-aware send-up of himself.
It was really funny.
Yeah, that's all I know about him. And his Instagram is creepy as hell. Because all of his kids look scarily identical. Like, they might be clones of him.
Yeah. Kind of, it reminds me of Boston Rob and Amber's children.
I was just thinking that. I was just about to say that.
Shout out to our Survivor friend heads people out there.
Survivor friend heads. People.
Well, that's all we got for Cape Side correspondence. Thank you, I guess, for some stuff, but we still don't have any... still don't have any Apple review.
Yeah.
Give us those apples.
You know what's going to happen if you guys don't leave reviews, right? They're going to take our show away.
Do you really want that?
Yeah. You're going to have to go.
Tim Cook is going to burst in here like the Kool-Aid man.
Yep.
Rip out these microphones from our hands.
Mr. Podcast himself is going to say, sorry, you got to find a new Dawson's Creek podcast, which is probably what you fuckers want, isn't it?
No.
Go find some other show to review.
You really want us to be like Michael Jackson and just become ghosts?
Yeah. Hee hee.
But it's so important to give us those reviews because it puts us up in the rankings when you search Dawson Creek podcast. It's so important. We just want to give everyone what they want, which is our hot takes.
We want to spread our message.
We want
far and wide.
To sprint. I'm going to try something new. Don't do that. Don't leave us reviews. I don't want them. I hate reviews. I think they're stupid. Mm-hmm. I think yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah. Also, emails, fuck them. Nobody wants those. Don't follow us on Instagram either.
I was going to say.
How's that feel, guys? Make you want to do it? I hope so. Okay.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Yeah. Okay, so this week, once again, we are talking about season 2, episode 21, Changes.
That was beautiful.
Who sings that song? Sorry, before
Bowie.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
As Dawson looks for a subject for his film class final, Andy and Jack's father insists on moving them away from Cape Side.
Ouchie. Mm.
This episode aired on May 19th, 1999. It's a lot of nines. 1999. Okay. And it was written by Dana Barada, directed by Lou Antonio.
Wowie zowie. 5191999. Lost? Anybody?
4815602023. I knew that date sounded familiar, and I just looked it up. That was the day that Star Wars The Phantom Menace was released.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I was in line at the movie theater that night instead of watching this.
Everyone thought really good thoughts that day going in, and people left feeling pretty bad.
I remember standing outside of the movie theater in my little town and watching two people have a lightsaber fight, one dressed as Darth Maul, one dressed as a Jedi, and thinking, this is the coolest shit I'm ever going to see. Wow.
And still holds up?
Yeah, it's still, and we got there like 3 hours early. Holy shit, man.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, screw Disneyland.
Yeah.
That's cooler than
That's
Disneyland.
Way cooler than Disneyland.
Now everyone's favorite character is Jar Jar Binks across the board.
Misa say no.
Should I do the episode description?
Yeah.
Jar Jar's voice?
No. Yeah, yes. Uh-oh. Maybe in Michael Jackson's voice. Let's see if we can get him to do it. Oh, no. No, Michael, no. Don't come
back
in here.
Michael.
Just flying around. Yeah. Yeah, I guess let's get into it.
We find our titular hero working on a project for his film class. Compare you or your life to Humphrey Bogart's character arc in Casablanca. Unfortunately, Dawson and his friends never ran a Moroccan bar that secretly aided the Allies in World War II with their fight against the Nazis. So he's having a hard time figuring out something to do. Ah, the light bulb moment. Instead, he'll make a documentary where he interviews people. Is it the same? Who cares? But here's the catch. No one wants to be under Dawson's cinematic microscope. That is until our boy rolls up to the ice house where Mr. Potter is leading a team and making some much needed renovations. Daddy Potter is more than happy to be Mr. Movie Man's subject, only on one condition. Dawson has to help with the renovations. Even though our boy can't use a hammer to save his life, Joey still finds him sexy as hell. In fact, this is arguably the most attracted to Dawson we've ever seen her. Although she expressed trepidation at Dawson drudging up old family wounds with the film project, she turns it around and even goes as far as to say that as of right now, her life is perfect. Her family's back together. She's with the boy of her dreams. The only thing that would make it better is a white picket fence. You don't say. Well, the next morning, Joey wakes up to Dawson building her a white picket fence. These two are too cute. Gee, I hope nothing bad happens. Well, wouldn't you know it, Dawson returns to the ice house to return some of Papa Potter's tools and sneakily catches our newly free family man hitting the slopes, aka dealing cocaine. Guys, he's back to his old ways. Shocked, stunned, our hero leaves the ice house only to run into JoJo. And you know what? He decidedly does not tell her what he just witnessed. Uh-oh. Speaking of uh-ohs, remember when our friend Andy decided to start having delusions and was hallucinating hanging out with her dead brother Tim? Well, Jack sure remembers because he called his piece of shit dad to come back to Capeside to do, well, something, anything. Mr. McPhee thinks what's best is to take her back to Providence where she and her mother can finally receive some actual psychiatric treatment. However, her entire support system is in Capeside. Andy doesn't know what she wants. After weighing some hefty pros and cons, it might be best to hit the road. But what about Pacey? He is disheartened, to say the least. He has proclaimed that he would not be where he is today without Andy. In fact, he suffers a great bit of imposter syndrome. What even is his identity without her? And with that in mind, he'll do anything to keep her in Capeside. They have one last night out together, all culminating in them returning to the spot where they first kissed. They reminisce and concur that their love for one another is still as strong as ever. Promises are made. She will come back for him one day. And meanwhile, Brother Jack is going through his own trials and tribulations with his papa. Like the shitbag papa is, he's really come back for a two-for-one in that he can get Andy some psychiatric help as well as quote-unquote cure Jack's sexuality. They have a few rows where Jack rightfully tells his dad about how he is who he is, and he just wants Daddy McPhee to be proud of him for being him. This too culminates in a big sequence in which Mr. McPhee stands to tell his son something, but the words escape him, and he sits back down like the coward he truly is. The next day, Andy says her goodbyes, which is decidedly not a real goodbye, just a sad see you later. With Daddy McPhee and Andy hitting the road, Jack will stay in Capeside, a permanent resident in this wonderful weird town. And that's the episode. Wow. Oh, wait, that's right. Jen Lindley. How could we forget? Well, the writer sure seemed to all the time. She's still staying at the Learys, but is longing for family. Jack gives her an idea. Hey, call your parents. See if they've maybe changed their minds. Well, she does, and they certainly haven't. Jen goes back over to Graham's house, but is unable to knock on the door. Where is she to go? We later find her at the bus stop with a ticket to nowhere as she feels unloved by her family. Jack runs to meet her, convincing her to stay in Capeside with him as his roommate in the McPhee McMansion. He does this with the sweet sentiment that it is worse to be incapable of loving than to not be loved. And we truly end this episode with Dawson finishing his film project. He monologues about his takeaways from Casablanca, that some characters want to change but fear they can't, and that love is what allows that change to happen. Is that another ghost? You guys hear that?
Yeah, that was the ghost of fun, because this episode fucking was not fun.
Really?
I didn't think so.
Oh, I thought the changes were interesting.
Really? Man, I thought this was just a drag to watch, and I thought it was just doing plot work just to advance something.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the changes, but I thought it was a little slow. Yeah. Like, maybe just some extra scenes, but some good, like, I thought it had good material.
Good bones. I feel like I have mixed feelings, but it felt like all the changes happened so quickly. It was like
clearly a lead up to a finale.
Yeah,
for sure.
It just felt like a lot of things were kind of rushed.
I guess that's kind of what I mean, is it just felt like they were like, oh shit, this is the end of the season, guys. We just spent like two episodes talking about a character we never cared about and killing her. And we have to do something. So I guess Jen's going to try to go home, and Andy's getting taken out of town, and Joey and Dawson are doing something. And Papa Potter is, I guess, dealing drugs again. Sure, that's because nothing changes there. You know, it's just...
Yeah, it's extremely transparent what they're doing. But we still need these beats to happen in a penultimate episode to set up the... finale, we'll get there.
Yeah.
But I kind of like what they're doing here. And something that I feel like we've been complaining a lot about in the show is how nothing fucking ever changes. Yeah. And these characters are always stuck in the same place. But then we get that interesting monologue at the end about what Dawson has learned from Casablanca and applying to his life is that people do fear change, and that keeps people stuck in the ways that they are. And people ever rarely change. And the only thing that actually makes people change is love, which, hey, that's the theme of fucking Dawson's Creek. And so I don't know. I think it kind of feels, it makes me feel better about the show that this is the point. This is the thesis, I guess, of what Dawson's Creek is supposed to be.
Right.
And the way that they've handled that episode, yeah, it's fucking rushed. I wish there was like maybe two or three episodes that led up to Andy leaving. But then again, I'm like, it's kind of an episodic show. These guys don't know like how many episodes of Dawson's Creek the audience is actually watching leading up to this. If you've skipped a couple, so it's like,
true.
I don't know. I don't know how to really argue for or against it, because all of these things do suck, but it is of its time.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think, like, for me, like, one of the most, like, not unbelievable, but just, like, felt, like, very rushed was, like, this friendship between Jack and Jen. It was, like, before this episode, we'd seen, like, maybe a couple interactions, and then all of a sudden, he's, like...
swooping in to save the day.
Yeah, making her, like... stay, and like, I don't know, it just seemed like they had this really strong connection. It was like, where did this come from? Like,
yeah,
well, that's again like why I want to put the writers of the show in a timeout, because they don't know what to do with Jen and Jack. I think they've done a pretty good job of establishing this season that he's the go-to empathetic boy who knows how to talk to everybody and heal them.
Yeah.
And so of course in the situation where Jen is dealing something, they're like, oh, I mean, plan A will always be send Jack in there to save the day, because that seems like the new go-to. But the fact that the relationship hasn't really, there's nothing that really builds the relationship, makes it awkward as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, some of the scenes in this, my favorite scenes in this episode were Jack scenes, I think.
Just oh, yeah.
Because, like, he's showing so much empathy, and I kind of like that, like, so he's a big brother, right? His sister's leaving, but he has that kind of, like, I think he has that, like, brotherly protective thing about him, so that was nice to see with him and Jen, even if it is kind of like just a like suddenly with them, like she needs someone, so it made sense to me.
I mean, I agree,
have their friendship start to grow,
and it does make sense. I think, like we were saying, if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Jack. He's the only person who seems capable of doing it, and we've seen in the interactions that he has had with Jen, he has seemed genuinely caring, right? So, I mean, I think it works. I'm curious what you guys think, and I'm sorry if I'm fast forwarding a little bit, but do we feel like this is the end of Andy's character on Dawson's Creek, at least for a little while?
I think that, yes, I think it would have to be necessary for what they're going to be doing with the rest of the show. It seems like this, everything's been leading up to like creating status quo changes. And mm-hmm. so I feel like removing Andy from the picture will have to create a new arc for Pacey.
Right.
Which sucks. I mean, I do love Andy. I hate how they've kind of like squandered her character
for sure.
arc and turned her into Cuckoo Bananas Girl. But it, I don't know. I think it's important for the show to like have to make these changes for the other, I don't know. I don't want to say more important characters, but like the established crew,
right.
the core
right.
four.
Yeah.
Because it feels like with, and I love Andy. I think she's a great character and I would love to see more of her, but it does feel like with her, there isn't really room for other people, you know? And then Pacey's character becomes just this Pacey and Andy character. Jen is gone. Maybe this is part of the reason why Jen is just not really in the picture anymore. And Jack is also kind of like being just used as a utility. So it does feel like maybe if they're removing Andy, they're creating space for other people. I'm curious if Andy will come back or if this is just, I mean, I'm sure that she'll come back in some way, shape or form, whether it's like a one episode or a two episode thing. But I'm curious if she's actually going to come back in a meaningful way at any point in time.
I think the only way that they would be able to do that is sever her relationship with Pacey and allow her to be a part of the friend group. Because right now all of her narratives are tied into what Pacey's doing.
Right.
And that's been giving him his own thing to do that's outside of the relationships of the other characters. But someone like Jack, who is being used as a utility and can be used for every character to be the empathetic shoulder to lean on, they would have to make Andy do something similar to that so she does have room to be in other places and not just within the eyesight of Pacey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does seem like not a great idea to just take her away so abruptly.
So abruptly.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I can't remember if it's Jack or Pacey say something about like, you know, taking her away from her support system isn't smart. And yeah, it's like, at least just like let her finish her, like the school year and like be with her friends and family and then maybe like have her go to Providence for the summer to like get some help.
And also, I like ask her what, like Jack was saying, ask what she wants, like allow her to choose or at least have a say in like what's happening with her.
Yeah, but Daddy McPhee doesn't go, you know, he doesn't work like that. He's just like, nope, we got to leave and we got to leave tomorrow morning, which is just like, why the fuck are you enforcing this? Like, I think Jack is like, why don't you just move your business here or start a new one? Like, why can't you be here for a week? A week. Mm-hmm. Let her finish this shit out and then move. It just feels so abrupt. And I think part of that abruptness or the speed in which it happens detracts from my ability to enjoy the episode. Cause I'm just like, why are we doing this? Why?
I think the reason, and again, it's an issue that I think that Andy was never created to be a fully fleshed out character. She was created to be something for Pacey.
Right.
And I think the reason being is if you're sitting in the writer's room and you're trying to think about like what would be the most emotionally effective thing that could like ruin Pacey, it's not a breakup because then it's clean slate. It's over. It's done. The story has over. The book is done. But if you have her being abruptly removed and there's still love between them, they say they're stronger than ever, then it's like, well, fuck. Like that abrupt takeaway is almost as bad as a death. Like there, you don't really get any answers to that relationship and it didn't end on anyone's terms. It's sad. It's way sadder that way. I don't agree with how that's done because I want Andy to have more development as a character, but this is when I say best, I mean like for character growth, this is the best thing they possibly could have done other than killing her, which I think would have been way over the top. Removing her, because of this, we're going to see something really interesting happen to Pacey.
Yeah.
At least I think so.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't really think about that too much, but I think this is going to provide him with a lot of opportunity to grow.
Yeah, and like when she's taking off, the look on his face, he's like genuinely scared about her leaving, and I think that is very telling because it's like he's afraid to face himself without Pacey, I mean, without Andy there, because she's kind of been, you know, his support. So,
I mean, he even says that at the beginning of the episode when he's going to do Dawson's documentary, he says that he doesn't even really have his own identity.
Right.
She is his identity. She made him who he is, and he doesn't know what he'll do without her. Now that she's gone, like, now Pacey gets to find out who he really is.
Yeah,
and speaking of utility, and to your point, she was never meant to be a fully fleshed out character. She was just supposed to be something for Pacey. Well, what that really did is it took Pacey from being the fucky horny boy into like a actually well-rounded character who has depth and they've really been able to redeem his character and put him in a new place with it feeling natural. And now Andy has served her purpose. Like, now we need to see Pacey actually put that stuff into motion, and that's what removing her will do. Will he be able to do this or not? He's going to have trials and tribulations, so we're going to see him struggle with that, but then we're going to see him be probably better and stronger on the other side, at least more independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I actually really do, I think that you kind of have swung my opinion to the other side a little bit. Having her go so abruptly, you're right. It is the best thing, because if they had time to plan for it, it wouldn't be as impactful, right? Mm-hmm. If they just broke up or something like that, that wouldn't be as impactful. Or if, as I thought was going to happen, Pacey was going to like tacitly support her until she gets better, and then they break up because their relationship has been irreversibly changed, that wouldn't feel good either. So instead we get to kind of just glaze over all of that. And now, hey, it's done.
It's done, and now he's psychologically fucked.
Right.
I can't imagine what his next relationship is going to be like, because now, in his mind, even if he's not aware of it, is relationships can end abruptly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who do I even want to put my trust in another person if they could be gone any minute? Like, this is going to be really damaging for his character, and I'm really this sounds like fucked up, but I'm excited to see how this damages him and how he overcomes it eventually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was I going to say? How is it even an option for Jack to stay by himself? Like that's even like,
dad's just going to pay the mortgage and Jack will live in a mansion. Yeah.
Well, he says he's going to sell the house.
Yeah.
Right. Eventually.
Like,
yeah.
Who's his legal guardian? Like, is that allowed to just like leave?
Yeah.
Abandon your kid.
That's a good point.
Like, in the '90s,
I guess. Yeah. It's the '90s.
It's just like so strange that that's even like the dad is so stubborn and, you know, like opinionated. It doesn't seem like he'd be like, all right. See ya.
And what I also find very strange about that is there's no real discussion of how their mom fits into this picture. Like, she is very mentally unwell. And they're just like, yeah, we need to get Andy the help she needs. Jack, I guess you'll live here with her and you'll take care of her.
No, dad said that he's going to take your mom too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they
must have missed that.
Oh, it is a blink and you'll miss it, because he's like, I'm here for your sister and your mother.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That's the last thing they ever discussed.
Your mother needs help too.
And it's like, how is Jack, like, is daddy going to send him money? Like, how is he supposed to pay for groceries, and where is he going to live eventually? I mean, I know
that chandelier.
Daddy money bags, you know. Just
like so wild. Just like, okay.
Yeah.
That works, I guess.
Just convenience, I guess.
Yeah.
And what'd you think of his dad this episode, though?
You know, dad. I don't know. I think he was a little better than he's been in previous episodes. He was less of a raging asshole while still being a asshole that is like very problematic. But I don't know if like is the right word, but the conversation that Jack and him had towards the end of the episode, like, did make me have a little bit of sympathy for the dad, because he clearly wants to do something. He's just got these fucked up, like the way he says it, I know you're having confusions about these gay thoughts you're having or something. It's like, okay, dude, what? And he's like, I just don't know how you could choose that lifestyle. It's like, dude, you're so fucking stupid. But he kind of is trying to support him. I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was way better than the first time we saw him, where he was just like, he wasn't a character. He was a caricature of bad dad. And he was just a fucking piece of shit. He's more like Pacey's dad in a way.
Yeah.
But this, I thought it made it so much more interesting. At least that moment where he stood up to say something to Jack and then couldn't find the words and sat back down. It was like so cowardly.
Yeah.
And it was so rich. Like, that's good character writing. Mm-hmm. Like, there is something inside of him that like, wants to hug his son. Like, he still loves him. And he's like, but all this fucking shitty talk radio that I listen to tells me gay people are, it's a choice and blah, blah, blah. Like, he's just repeating, he's parroting fucking talking points that Rush Limbaugh is telling him when he listens to AM radio. But now he's like, oh, my own flesh and blood is gay. And now I have to process that.
Yeah.
It's rich. It's good. I hope we do return to this.
And then like later when he says, I just want you to be happy, you know, toward the end of the episode, I thought that was also a good, like just good writing. And
It shows that he does care, right? Yeah. That he's not just this callous, like he's not abandoning his son, even though he is abandoning his son. Right. And he's like letting him cut loose and do his own thing. But I think that, you know, Jack telling him like, look, I can't move in with you because if I do, I'm just going to like change just for you. And I can't do that. It's not fair to myself and it's not fair to you. So I think like, you know, we see that they have a pathway to a relationship in the future. Like his dad is kind of leaving that door open. Jack is also like unburdening himself from hating his dad, I think is the way I took it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited to see. I hope that that's what we're getting is like in a couple seasons, we'll see a McPhee family reunion where he gets the hug that, you know, he needs.
I guess I kind of want to talk about Jen a little bit. So she has her phone call with her mom and I mean, it sounds like mom and dad don't want her to come home. I don't know if it's just because of the incident with Grams. Otherwise it's like, she's been doing like, well, like the reason they kicked her out was because of all her partying and,
she says the thing about like her dad saying like,
it was just a ploy to get more money or something. Right.
Them thinking that she just is wanting more money or something else that she's not actually wanting to come
home. I didn't really understand that. Like, she's asking to come home so her dad will give her more money.
It doesn't really make much sense. But she also said that like dad is still scarred from catching her having sex on their bed or whatever.
But it's been like a year?
2 years at this point. Yeah. Well, no, time doesn't really exist in the show, but
still the same year as season one.
So there's still, it's so weird. I feel like,
this is one of those times where it's like, okay, sure. Just say whatever the fuck the conversation was, because we only heard the one half of it. And then they're just like, she's at the bus station, is revealing all the details of the conversation. It's like, sure, dude. Yeah, whatever. I guess we didn't even need to fucking see you talking on the phone because what we saw the conversation starting as, and then what she later reveals it is just like, okay, sure. You guys see what I'm saying? Like, what are you fucking like?
Yeah.
We didn't need to see her make that phone call.
Yeah.
I like the phone call scene only for one reason. Let me go back a little bit, but I thought the cinematography in this episode was, mediocre. Like a lot of the shots, especially when people are having conversations, were like zoom in or like medium close-ups, and it felt extremely claustrophobic and not even for the point of it to feel claustrophobic to the audience. It just felt like someone's first time shooting something.
Went right back to the static shots that we were kind of complaining about.
Yeah. And it didn't really feel like it was delivering anything visual to the audience. That's like also telling the story too. But the shot where Jen calls her parents, I thought was really well crafted, because in the foreground, you have Jen on the phone. She's wearing blue. And then in the background, it's blue. And the background of like where she's standing. But then the actual background is the Leary's living room, which is painted in like golden light, and there's sunlight. And it's kind of like a warm, inviting space. And it felt like they were creating a very clear demarcation line in the image of showing that she is isolated from like a family. She never gets to have the family room with the warmth. She's trapped in this like cold area where she's like unsure about like who her family is. She doesn't feel the love from her parents that she deserves. So that was like one thing in that scene that I was like, oh, that's so cool that they're like telling us this visually that she's like, she doesn't have a family. I thought that was pretty rich. But aside from that, I thought the cinematography in this episode is pretty fucking weird.
Well, there was that one really cool trick shot where Dawson walks up to Joey at school and tries to put the camera in her face. And then she walks around the corner and the camera goes through the wall. Whoa!
And you see him looking through the window.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What are you talking about? Cinematography was fucking awesome,
dude. You're right.
But going back for a second, I, and kind of like relating this to the Jack and Jen friendship, I don't remember if it was the, yeah, I think it was the last episode. We see Jen and Gail have like a pretty mm-hmm. like sweet connection. I really liked that their relationship in that episode. I kind of wish there was maybe like more of that in this episode, like instead of just like Jack trying to like get Jen thinking about her relationship with her parents, like a heart to heart between her and Gail. Like, I feel like that would have fit really nicely.
It would have been great to get a, I know why they didn't, because they wanted the fake out at the bus stop where we think she's going home, but she's actually just going somewhere.
Also, Gail's leaving, so they're probably not going to write more between them, those two.
But I really wish that we got, instead of her confiding in Jack about how bad that conversation went, her confiding in Gail about how bad that conversation went, and then Jen making the decision to leave anyway. Mm-hmm. And then Jack swoops in and tells her the same things that he tells her and convinces her, you know, it's better to be unloved than to be incapable of love. Because Gail, I don't know, like, then I don't know. I guess to your point though, then we wouldn't be able to land that feeling that she has, that she's never going to have that family life.
Well, again, now that we're talking about it, I'm really surprised that we didn't get a sequence where Gail has to tell Jen that she's leaving.
Yeah.
Great point.
Or wants to leave, because then that would be like another abandonment for her from like a mother figure. Mm-hmm. That would have been really good.
Yeah, why didn't Jen go to talk to her about it? And then before she can even get it out, Gail's like, well, I'm actually going to be moving to Philadelphia.
Gail and Mitch weren't even in this episode, by the way, at all.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Okay, it's time to pee. Goodbye. And we're back, and I want to talk very briefly about this episode's product placement. Several things were placed pretty prominently, and I'm wondering if you guys caught at least the three that I caught.
I don't know if I did. I'm trying to think.
I think I did.
Subway, for sure.
Subway?
Subway?
Okay, four things. I forgot about Subway. Yeah, Jen mentioned Subway. She calls him out by name when she goes to talk to Jack. She says, share my Subway sandwich for something. I can't remember.
Don't remember that.
It's very throwaway and weird, but in the very beginning, in
on the dock, when they're on the dock.
Yeah. In the cold open, when Dawson is talking about this film project.
Didn't even notice what he's drinking. Is that what you're...
Yeah. He's got a big old can, a bottle of Snapple on his desk, labeled facing us. And there's one other subtle, more subtle product placement. There's a Gateway mouse pad.
Oh,
God, with the cow print.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I remember thinking Gateway was like the coolest thing. This is back when they had all those cow commercials and the boxes, the computers came in the cow box. Mm-hmm. God, that was so cool. That branding. Does Gateway even exist anymore?
No, they are dead.
God, that's sad. Because I thought they were going to be like the big brand. Mm-hmm. But the most product placement of all of them was Nike.
Oh, I do remember seeing something Nike related.
We got so many shots of Jack's shoes in this episode. They
interesting. I didn't even notice.
Well, I happened to work for a footwear brand that will remain unnamed. But I, of course, was just hyper fixated on this because I needed to know what the shoes were, why they were being featured. I did so much research. I even asked some of my colleagues if we knew about this. Like, was this something?
Did you send a screenshot?
I should have. I couldn't get a good enough screenshot. Oh, yeah. All of the ones that featured the shoe, they ended up blurry. But I did a bunch of research on this. So the shoes that he is wearing are Air Terra Triax shoes, which is a running shoe that was based off of the Air Max unit, but then it got brought outside of Air Max and then just got remade. They got released in May of the year prior, and I am just like, they spent so much time on these fucking shoes. When Jack's coming down the stairs, they follow his shoes down the stairs. They do another shot where they're basically kind of like lower thirding Jack as he's walking.
That's right. Yeah. I do remember the foot shot because I
so
thought
much.
It made me think of Step Brothers when they're running down the stairs because they're excited to play in the garage.
It's just so weird. And I wasn't able to find any official connection, any official thing where at Nike they talked about, you know, this partnership that they had. And I'm just curious, why do you think they featured Jack, of all people, wearing Nike shoes? Nike shoes, you know, they're like super sporty, right? They're very cutting edge branding and marketing, right? That's their whole thing. Why did they choose Jack?
That's a good question.
I have two theories. One, let's say it's not a partnership and it was just a part of the costuming. I mean, Nike has always been hip. And so I out of all the characters, who's the most hip? I feel like Jack is the most hip.
Sure.
He's the most like artistic. And I think at this point, Nike wasn't just doing, they weren't just like pitching to athletics. It was like a brand that is like outside of athletics. It's like anyone could wear Nike.
They were going for, at that point in time, they were going for the revolutionary. That was their lifestyle model, was the person, the rebel, the like outsider.
There you go.
Because they were kind of unique. They are unique looking shoes, that particular style that he was wearing. So.
They were, yeah. I thought that they were different. The Air Max Plus, which had just been released as of the recording of that episode. And I thought that he had like some kind of like advanced promo and they were trying to like place this out in the world before it got released. But instead it's a shoe that had existed is now like a dad sneaker.
Sure, yeah.
People really like that shoe for its like chunky dad style. But at the time it was not really like a cool shoe, but it was from one of the, you know, these big, big brands. And we don't see a lot of like footwear or, I would say much of like obvious fashion branding in the show. It just felt really like, whoa, what the fuck? Why is that there?
Well, then it makes sense too. So the other thing is that it was marketing and Nike was selling them as an advertisement. And I mean, again, what better character to represent what they're trying to push than Jack being like the outsider character. And I feel like Nike, I mean, they're a corporate entity, but they are socially progressive. And I feel like it would make sense for them to have an out gay character wear their product. Mm-hmm. It looks good for them. So that makes sense.
It's funny because when I was doing my research, I was trying to see if anybody, before I just went through the whole catalog to find the shoe model, I was like, what if people, like, does anybody know? And everybody was talking about how Jack got put in the quote, straightest shoes ever. They think that it wasn't a good fit because he's gay and these shoes are straight. What? Which I don't think those shoes are straight coded really in any way. I didn't think it was, the only thing that I thought was weird is that they're a sporty shoe and he isn't like a sporty character.
Yeah, as far as we know, he's not into any sports yet.
I thought maybe Pacey could have been a better fit for those, but he wears like bowling style.
Also, Pacey's like runs full speed to Andy, so that would have made more sense if he's wearing like running shoes. I mean, Jack, to be fair though, runs to Jen at the bus stop.
That's true.
A lot of running in this episode.
Lots of running.
I do want to point out another product placement.
Yeah.
Hello Kitty.
Oh, yes.
On the date with on Andy and Pacey's date,
they're all
in their date night outfits, fancied up, and she has this little Hello Kitty purse, and it's very clearly in the shot.
It's very cute.
I was just so distracted by her outfit. I was like, why is she dressed
purple,
like Grams?
All in purple. Yeah, dude. Well, she's always been kind of that preppy look, so I didn't. I thought that made sense to me, but she was wearing all purple, which was interesting.
Weird. And then Pacey's shirt.
Yes, dude. Velvet, crushed velvet.
With like a weird pattern. Like it's like a bowling. It could have been like tribal fire print if you asked me to describe it.
Yeah.
It was wild. That was
very funky, very weird.
I hope we get to see that shirt again.
Me too.
It was kind of like Pacey from season one style.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
we're
definitely
seeing him slowly regress back to who he was in real time.
One other interesting point, actually. One other fashion thing was the cloud PJs that Joey was wearing.
I actually want to talk. Yeah.
Those were so big. I remember my sister like having a pair like that and just like those being everywhere. That was like such a quintessential 90s PJ thing.
Like the clouds or that style?
The clouds.
Oh, okay. Because I remember having that style of PJ, but I want to talk about the cloud, the pattern specifically for Joey. So to me, this represented, if you look at these pajamas, clouds, blue sky, like it looked like, it's not like cloudy, gloomy. It's like this beautiful like blue with like fluffy white clouds, right? Very dreamy, optimistic. Mm-hmm. And in this scene, she's standing next to the white picket fence. So to me, that was like very significant of like her, like how she feels right now in this moment. She's very optimistic. And that she even, someone calls, can't remember who it was, said she's very happy-go-lucky right
now. Yes, Dawson says that.
Yeah, Dawson says that. And she's also like really excited about the ice house renovation. She's like in really good mood and like, you know,
She's living in a fantasy.
She's on cloud nine.
She's
on
her cloud head nine. Is in the clouds.
Yes, exactly. So I loved that.
Yeah. Mm. I thought it was a good bit of not so subtle or maybe subtle symbolism, yeah. right? Like we, at least when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, she's going to wake up from this dream.
Mm. Totally.
Like yeah. this can't last forever.
Exactly. That's what they're setting us up for, I think.
Yeah. It's basically the shot from Blue Velvet, like the opening shot of the white picket fence with the
Yeah.
The blue skies and the clouds in the background. Shout out David Lynch.
David Lynch.
Also, how long did this day feel to everyone?
Forever.
So long. That's why so I felt like the episode the episode felt so slow because of that
so
to
confusing.
Me. Like it was just so many very yes. Yeah, so,
like,
a lot of things.
We have Dawson building this platform, like figuring out his project,
yeah.
building the platform, then interviewing Mr. Potter, and then Pacey is like at Andy's house and they're like dealing with all the drama of like what's going to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, I have so much to do. And then he's like, I think we should go on a date tonight. So then he like leaves, changes and comes back and gets her and they go on a date. It was just like so much. And then Jen, this also didn't really make sense to me, went to Graham's house in the middle of the night with all her stuff mm-hmm. to like say goodbye. And then mm-hmm. she like doesn't knock on the door.
Well, I thought it was to stay.
I thought it was goodbye.
Yeah, because really? She was yeah, like, cause she's got, she says say like bigrams yeah. or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was taking it as, is she's going up and it's like, okay, this is my last, this is like the last ditch effort. Like maybe I'll patch it up with Grams, but then she's like, is there, she's going to knock and she just goes, I can't do this. And so actually, instead she's saying goodbye.
I kind of think you're right because otherwise, why else would she have her bag with her?
Well, that's, I guess, oh, yeah, yeah, to me, it didn't make sense because then the next time we see her is at the bus station. So I was like, where did she go? Sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So well, yeah, maybe that
what
is.
What we didn't know is that bus station is in the next town over and she had to walk there.
That's so
spent
sad.
All night
Jack
walking.
Ran all night to go.
Yeah. Yes.
But then that was like another thing where it was just like, Jack shows up at the bus station. How did he know she was there?
Confusing. Yeah.
Well, they
felt like there was a deleted scene.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Because like they had the dock scene. You know, where they're chatting. And so there's got to be something in there where there was like, yeah, where they talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Do you think the evidence that we're supposed to take as Jen and Jack having a good relationship is the episode when they went to the dance and he was her,
right?
He yep. was like her, like, quote unquote, date. And then they just like hung out that night. Like, is that supposed to establish, like, yeah, they are close? And
that
then,
was the, like, yeah. That's like one of the only things that,
yeah,
interactions we've seen between them. And that was last
weird,
season, right?
Awkward.
Was that the first season?
No.
No, that was the season.
They're introduced in season two, those two, right? The beginning of season two?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
I hope this is the beginning of a friendship between them because I really like their, so far in this episode, what we've seen between them. So
they have good chemistry together.
Yeah. Yeah, as
it seems
as
very
friends.
Natural.
Yeah.
They act well together. They yeah. like play off of each other well.
It's much more organic than her and Jonathan mm-hmm. Vanderbeek. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of Jonathan Vanderbeek, I fucking hated him in this episode so much. I found him so yeah. fucking annoying. I found him and Joey repulsive. I didn't want to fucking yeah. see any okay. more of them.
So I did a kiss count.
Ooh.
We had kissy cam going the whole time.
They kissed so many times. Like
so
just compared,
much.
Just like we've barely seen them kiss, right? They kissed 10 times in this episode.
Jesus. Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is when they were dating.
I wonder.
It felt like they...
And that's like one day, right? That's like in a yeah. day.
I find it hard to believe that they dated in real life because they have no chemistry.
No.
Zero. Why do we think they were kissing so much? Because to me, it was like, are they trying to prove to themselves mm-hmm. that they have chemistry?
Yeah, I think it was like...
Because their kisses were so fucking forced.
I think it was like heavy-handed on purpose because, you know... We're supposed to think that everything's good between them,
yeah.
but something's got to go wrong.
They're
right?
selling it to
also,
the audience.
Yeah. And also Joey's in this great mood. So she's, mm-hmm. I feel like she did a lot of the, like of the, you know,
yes.
going in for the kiss or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
and she's like turned on by him.
Yeah.
Like,
or, like the sweaty, his like in that scene where he's like all sweaty. Oh,
they're desperately trying to make us believe that they yeah. are extremely happy right now. Cause we've never right. seen Joey actually happy in this relationship.
Yeah. No.
She's
yeah.
always been the one, like with a foot out the door ready to go because she doesn't know if this is the right thing to do. This is the first time mm. we're seeing her head over heels for Dawson.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. I feel like that was kind of like the main piece to it is that like, she's like the happiest she's ever been. She's
yeah.
living this perfect life now. And so she's like more, affectionate with Dawson.
I also thought it was kind of interesting that she kind of has like a, I wouldn't call it a turning point in the episode because she's very much, they're trying to sell their relationship the whole episode. But when she seems most into it is when he is doing this like hard labor at the, at the bar. And it's, she even kind of comments like, oh, you should change, basically you should change who you are because this is hot.
And that's like not him, you know,
exactly.
He's not that kind of a.
So not so guy, subtly kind of saying like she would prefer somebody else, somebody not like him.
Well, it felt, it, when she did that, it kind of clicked in more for me of what she wants in a partner. And it's kind of like, she clearly has daddy issues. Not that we're going to like get like, it's a trope, but it's a trope for a reason. And she is looking for a father. And so that's why she's turned on by the fact that now Dawson is doing something, what she believes is masculine, which is what her father is doing in creating these renovations and rebuilding the ice house. And that's clear, like him rebuild. I mean, I don't know. It's so funny that like now he's like, I'm a builder now.
Right.
They're clearly doing that because it's supposed to be symbolic of him rebuilding the family unit. Yeah. The ice house is their livelihood. It's what they're, it's a family business. He's the one creating renovations. He is adding himself to the family. Like
he's supporting them. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
Like that's like, it's all supposed to be there for a reason. And of course he's fucking trafficking drugs through the ice house now too, which is representative of him fucking up in the family by doing drug dealing. So it's like, that's there for a reason. And the fact that Joey finds Dawson sexy for being, she's finding him sexy for being daddy. Oh, my daddy's good now. And now you're doing daddy. Now I think you're hot too, which is gross and Oedipal and fucked up, but that is what it is. And I thought it was kind of rich. What we're dealing with.
It had, at least it told a story. You know, there was something there as you're, we're able to derive some kind of meaning from it instead of just being like, okay, well, he's the only boy in town and she's the only girl in town. Exactly. So therefore they are into each other.
Yeah. What are y'all's thoughts on, in the cold open, Joey leaving through Dawson's door instead of the ladder?
This is like the second time she's done that, right?
It may be the second time, but it was very, it was like a very clear shot of like Joey's leaving through the door.
It felt very different.
Yeah.
Something about it felt very weird to me.
I know we've talked about it before. Like, this was like two episodes ago. I think it was the first time we saw her leave through the front door. And,
no, not the front door. His bedroom door.
No, I know. That's what I mean.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, okay.
But his bedroom door instead of the window. And it feels.
Well, it might have been like both of them at that time. I just feel like this one was more, felt more telling to me than that time, I guess. I don't remember what it was. Maybe I can go back and reference it at some point, but
it feels like they're shifting the relationship. I mean, they're not, they're messaging that things are different, right?
Yeah.
And that we're at the same time while trying to put this front up that like everything's great. We've never been happier.
I think when we did talk about this, it's reestablishing what the relationship is on like an even ground because her character has always been the person that has to climb a fucking ladder outside to come through his window. And now they're both on equal terms. They can enter the house and leave the house, enter and leave the room in the same exact way. They're on an even playing field.
I wonder if that time it was, she came in through the, I think it was that she came in through the door. I just think this time it was that she left, which I don't know if that's like a little bit of a different meaning, but to me, I just thought it had like, it was an interesting double meaning. Like, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? It's a change and
like the,
you know,
episode title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Are they too comfortable? You know, that's yeah.
Something.
I thought it was interesting.
I want to go back a second. You counted the number of times that Dawson and Joey kissed. I also had a count going. I had a count of how many times they said Andy's name in this episode because holy fuck, dude. Do you guys want to guess?
Andy. Was it mostly Mr. McPhee?
No.
Oh, really?
He says it a bunch in the first couple of episodes, but no, it's actually not him.
I guess 19 times.
Okay.
11.
11, okay.
Feels like more. I'm going to even say 30.
Okay. Cody, you take the cake. It is 27 times.
Damn it. I was almost going to guess 25.
That gives us 0.61 Andys per minute in this episode. Almost every minute they say her fucking name.
That makes sense.
In one scene, they say her name four times. It is when Pacey and Jack are talking with Dad at the house. It's just like, Andy, 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 Andy. Everybody's constantly fucking saying her name. It's insanity. It was driving me fucking crazy. I couldn't watch the episode because I would just be like, when are they going to say her name next? When are they going to fucking say her name next? It's
so
much.
Now I know why you wanted to go,
yes.
Go back to the... We were watching it this morning. He's like, oh, I just want to go back, but I don't want to say why. Okay.
Just ridiculous to me. I wonder how much of it was written and how much of it was just because Pacey does this thing. Joshua Jackson does this thing where he like says character names as he's speaking to them a lot. Like it almost seems ad-libbed. So I don't know if that's part of it, but God, it was just like, they would be talking to Andy and be like, Andy, you got to do this thing, blah, 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 blah. But Andy, you got to do this thing, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, I know, I'm sorry. We're the only two fucking people in the room. I know you're fucking talking to me. Like, it's driving me insane.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because I, like, the only devil's advocate situation I can see where this is, like, why it is the way it is again, like, you don't know how often people are tuning in and you want to make sure your audience knows who these people are. That's the only thing, because I also know that like it's a big screenwriting no-no. Like nobody in real life ever says the other person's
yes.
name. I don't remember the last time I said Stella's name.
Yeah.
Like, no, same. It's yeah. so fucking weird.
It
and
is
when
very
I do
strange.
Have to, if we're like in a public place and I go, Stella, like, like insane. Does not even make sense.
The only time you say somebody else's name when you're talking to them is when you're angry or disappointed at them. You know, it's like Mallory, pick up your clothes off the floor. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like that kind of thing. It's never just like we're talking and I'm like, so Mallory, how are you doing today? Oh, but Mallory, yeah. you look so nice today.
Thank you, James.
It's so fucking weird.
Feels like I'm in The Sims.
I want to talk a little bit about Dawson's project and his sort of journey through the episode with his project.
Yes.
I loved that he kept getting turned down.
Yes.
By yeah. like person after person, like Joey turns him down. Jen turns him down, makes this joke about her hair.
Yeah.
I loved that. And then when it came to Pacey, I thought this was really interesting. The scene with him like starting to film Pacey, he actually turns the camera off when he realizes that Pacey's really going through something. And I thought that was like an interesting change because I feel like maybe half the season ago, like, you know, several episodes ago, he wouldn't have like noticed that. And he would have just kept filming because it's his project and he needs to like finish his project or whatever, you know. But I thought this is an interesting character like growth with him actually knowing that Pacey is feeling something and wanting to like help him through it.
And not even that he wouldn't notice. Dawson's an exploitative filmmaker.
Right.
Like
exactly.
if anything, that's like yeah. what he wants.
Right.
He wants people to be emotional and spill their beans. So
like
he
was with Jen when he thought she was going to give him something juicy, you know, he's like trying to get the right angle and get her from a one quarter profile.
Yeah.
Instead, but he turns the camera off.
To listen to Pacey.
Yeah.
Right, you know,
I thought that was interesting too, because it was also like, he's the only one who's actually willing to engage with what Dawson is asking him. And then he's like, oh, no, we shouldn't film this one. I thought that was interesting, too. I'm more confused by why Dawson is doing this in the first place. This is clearly not what the assignment is.
No, not at
all. Yeah, no, he, like, changes the assignment. He's supposed to be writing a paper, right? And he's like, I'm going to be, like, super creative. And he thinks this is going to work for Miss Kennedy?
Exactly.
Like,
she would have been like, oh my God.
Can you
imagine being
idiot.
His teacher?
Yeah. When he first is writing the paper, he's writing it about her.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
This weird internal monologue shit where it's like he's speaking. I thought he was speaking at first, but then it's actually just his internal monologue as he's writing that, which I feel like we don't get a lot of that in this show.
No,
we never get
all.
Like ADR from, it's like a Sex and the City type thing.
And they bookend the episode.
And I didn't even notice
it
first. Cause like in that scene they have the internal monologue. Right. And then they go to see like show Joey on the bed. And at first I was like, was he saying that out loud?
Right.
And like Joey's in there, but then looked back and he wasn't talking.
So weird.
Yeah.
And it makes me think again, like, cause we've all talked at length about how much of a fucking piece of shit Dawson is. And it's like, oh, like the writers are aware of it because Dawson clearly says in this episode, when he's having that argument with Joey, he doesn't want to put the camera on himself because he's afraid of who he is. Mm-hmm. And he's afraid of Joey finding out who the real him is. And that means that, Dawson is even aware that he is kind of a little shit and terrified to admit it.
I actually liked that moment though, because I felt like it actually was vulnerability from Dawson, when a character who is never vulnerable.
Totally. Yeah.
So it was interesting and kind of, I don't know if it's like a sign of him actually changing, but he was actually capable of articulating a weakness and a vulnerability of himself.
Yeah. Well, if we want to apply his monologue to himself, like the only thing that can actually make you change is love, he clearly doesn't love himself, which is why he's stuck in his ways. Kind of like Mr. Potter or anyone else in this fucking show, they're stuck in their ways and they can't move and they can't progress. Dawson, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that everything fucks up in his life because he hasn't accepted who he truly is as a person. And so that's why everything is constantly burning down around him.
That's a good read.
And then Mr. Potter's, I feel like one of the kind of like Mr. Potter saying to like put someone else's needs before your own because you love them. And then, I mean, this didn't feel like a big need, but Dawson like staying up all night to build some of this white picket fence for Joey to like finish her like fantasy of this perfect life is like, you know, him really taking in what she said and like trying to do something genuinely nice for her.
That fence is so fucking stupid, dude.
I know.
And if you're Bessie, you're like, no, I don't want this.
Yeah. Also, he stayed up all night to build like 10 panels. Feet of
fence. He just learned how to use a hammer.
Sure. Yeah. That's true. We did see him fucking up like real hard earlier, but like, how did that take him all night? Also, was he building it on the spot and they're all sleeping and they're like, kah, 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 kah. And they don't know that he, or did he like
row over with
row,
it?
Yeah. Where, what, how? I want
to
know.
I bet he did it at the ruins, the makeout spot from season one. He probably had to go there to build it because he can't do it at his house. His mom would have, she's like, I'm moving to Philly tonight.
Yeah, right.
Get me out of here.
I also just don't believe that Dawson is that incapable of doing shit. If he's like we saw him when he was filming the movie, like, he has got to have built something for one of his, like, he built the whole, I guess actually Jack did, but the mini for the movie, the mini town, the miniature town of Creekside or whatever.
He's done like, didn't he do some of the like masks and stuff?
Exactly. Like this dude has got to have, he knows how to use a hammer.
Jack, but yeah.
I just feel like it's so unbelievable that they're trying. I don't know. Maybe I'm up in the night, but
only speaking for myself, I've always been a film guy. And even like when I was younger and I'd make movies kind of like how Dawson did, I would be so good with making things practically. But as soon as my parents are like, you have to do this chore or like this thing where you actually have to like use your hands and like build something, it's a fucking disaster. I felt very seen by Dawson in this episode. I can't fucking build anything unless it's a Lego.
Okay. Well, maybe there's some truth to that then. Shall we move on to...
Oh, one last thing that I do want to talk about is how fucking crazy it is that this entire time I thought Mr. Potter was probably dealing like coke or heroin, and that's what got him meth, I don't know, in prison, and it was weed?
Yeah, right.
That's
I feel like they say that.
They say that already? Yeah. Weed, that's
it? A long time ago, yeah.
Fucking crazy. And how quickly he's graduated to dealing cocaine.
Yeah,
well, I just...
Not officially. They showed a bag of cocaine.
He's trafficking
at
it.
The very end. Dawson sees,
exactly, because then Joey's like, hey, what's going on? And he looks like a deer in headlights. He's like, everything's fine. See ya.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, that is quite the jump to go from
weed so
to
stupid. It's and just yeah, so such fucking a dumb stupid.
Move. Yeah.
I don't like it. I thought it was lazy. I thought it was super lazy that they decided to do that. And it just eroded any goodwill that I was starting to get with this writer's room in treating characters like actual people, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, it's going with the theme of people are unable to change, which I do like. The thing I don't like is that it's fucking cocaine, because that now it's like, God, it feels so, it's such a leap.
Yes. Yeah.
It's such a big jump. It seems fucking crazy town that we're dealing cocaine on the show.
Yeah. It's like a scare tactic, I guess. I don't know. Just very odd and out of left field.
One more thing I wanted to mention was I was really excited about the changes in the ice house.
Me too.
Ice house is getting a lounge,
Right?
Will this be the new jazz club?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of exciting, right?
A lot of it is sexy.
Right? It was like the red walls. It felt like
they're going to bring that
band
in.
They're going to bring that entertainment to the Ice House.
Actually, the band would probably just be Dawson and Andy singing their blues songs. My name's Dawson Leary.
remind me.
Yeah. All right. Well, ratings, recommendations, and Peak Creek moment of the week.
Yeah, it's a 3.5 for me. I really like some of the beats that are happening in this episode. I mean, there's a lot that I don't really like in this episode, but I think that they're doing it for the characters, and it's going to make interesting things happen for these characters. What they're doing to make those things happen is kind of wonky, but hey, fuck it. Like, things are happening, and for a show that things often where nothing is happening, I'm just begging for anything, and I guess this is what we're getting, so I'll take it. My Peak Creek moment is Joshua Jackson's off-screen to on-screen run to see Andy off. Stella and I rewound it three or four times because in the background is hearing the...
Yeah, I thought it was a horse.
Yeah.
Very funny.
I would have loved to see the handler who's keeping Joshua Jackson off camera until his, and they give him the signal and he's just like,
I will give this episode a 3.75. I thought it was kind of slow, but I did like it. I felt like some of the scenes could have been cut, but I understood that it was a setup for the finale, you know, changes coming. So got to put all these changes in for all these characters. I really loved the scenes with Jack and then also the Andy and Pacey stuff. I thought the Dawson and Joey scenes were pretty heavy handed, but probably intentional. So I thought overall it was an effective episode and not bad. So 3.75. Peak Creek is Jen and Joey turning Dawson down for his film project. And then also Dawson hitting his thumb with a hammer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Fun. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm going to give it a 3.25. I liked a lot of the progression for some of these characters in this episode. I really like that we're getting set up to see Pacey kind of go through it and see some more growth from him. This episode did make me pretty emotional. I cried a few times. Whoa. I know. Just the goodbye between Pacey and Andy really hit me. I really felt for them. Yeah, and you know, as mentioned before, I just didn't love some of the stuff that felt kind of forced and quick, but otherwise I thought it was like a decent episode. My Peak Creek moment is all the shots of Dawson working on the platform and him being really sweaty and gross.
All right. My rating, I am going to break away from these people. I'm giving this episode a 2. I initially was giving it a 1.6, but Cody, you did win me over and it helped me kind of reconcile a few things. I don't hate this episode. I also don't like this episode. I found it pretty boring and just kind of a stinker overall. My Peak Creek moment of the week is the ghost of Elvis Presley being at the bus station. I don't know if you guys saw this. Yes. If you didn't, go back and watch the last 5 minutes of the episode when Jack runs to catch Jen at the bus station. There is a ghost of Elvis Presley. I swear to God, it is him in the background. And then there's a guy with the coolest sideburns in the world who also gets in line behind.
That's not Elvis?
Jen. No, it's a different person.
Wowie.
But yeah, that is... that. So recommendations. I will start first. I am recommending something a little bit different. Let me stretch. I'm recommending, I guess it's a social media account, by the name of Skate IQ. That's like SKATEIQ. It is a gentleman by the name of Mitchie Brusco. He is a professional skateboarder and he is created this amazing wealth of resources for anybody who's ever wanted to learn how to skateboard or knows how to skate but wants to learn different sides of skateboarding. He's arguably the best teacher that there is, in my opinion. He makes these super short, digestible, approachable, and super informative videos about techniques and concepts of skateboarding. I've been skating since I was 8 years old, took several breaks, and I'm recently coming back to it. And I'm just amazed at the total change in the online skate community. When I was a kid, well, there wasn't an online skate community, but generally speaking, it was not very friendly or welcoming to new people. Now it's like people are just all about celebrating the little wins. And I just think you should go check it out. It might make you want to try to skateboard. At the very least, it'll kind of open your eyes to just how cool it can be. If you want to, find him on Instagram or find him on YouTube. He posts a bunch of videos. And he also has a Patreon where he goes into much more detail. But it's really great. It's really heartwarming. And he's just a nice dude. Go give him a follow.
I'm going to recommend the TV show After Midnight.
Hey.
It is a quote-unquote game show slash it's not really a game show with a panel of comics. It's hosted by Taylor Tomlinson. It's on CBS. You can also watch it on Paramount Plus. It's in the same, like, based on the game, or not game, the show At Midnight, which was popular, I don't know.
It was on Comedy Central in the late 90? Aughts.
Okay.
Yeah.
With Chris Hardwick. This new iteration of it started just, I think, at the beginning of this year. Taylor Tomlinson is extremely charming. And then the comics are, it's a pretty wide range of like people that are well known to very like lesser known comics, but like Paul F. Tompkins has been on there, Lisa Gilroy, Moshe Kesher, Natasha Leggero, a lot of people from Comedy Bang Bang. And they like riff on clips of from the internet that have been popular and trending that are like sometimes kind of painful to watch, but also very funny. It's available. It's on Monday through Thursday. So there's a lot of episodes to catch up on if you are interested.
Okay. I am going to recommend a phone app called Libby. It's spelled L-I-B-Y. Oh, yeah. So this is a free app where you can check out ebooks, digital audiobooks, and magazines from your public library. I think there are some other similar apps available depending on where you're located. But with this app, you can basically transfer ebooks to a mobile device like a Kindle. And it's similar to like checking a book out physically. They have wait lists, and then once a book is available, you can borrow it for about 20 days, and then it gets returned after that. So it's like, for me, it's a good motivator for finishing books because you only have that many days. And like, I love having physical books, but this is a good tool to have if you don't have the means to spend money on books or just don't want to like accumulate books. So it's a good one. Libby.
Yeah. And if you are listening and you're like, oh, but I don't have a library card, so I can't use it. Actually, they make it super easy to get a library card through whatever your local library is. So as long as they're participating in the program, you can basically apply for a digital library card right then and there. And then within, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, you're now able to get your audiobooks or whatever it is. So go check it out. It's good to read. Feels nice.
My recommendation this week is the new Adrian Lenker album, Bright Future, lead singer, songwriter, Big Thief's new solo record. It's really gorgeous and stripped down. It's like an amalgam of folk, country, and slowcore. Flows from songs with traditional structures to more like free-flowing avant-garde with incredible ease. With each subsequent record, either with her band or going solo, she proves to be one of the best songwriters working right now. And like most of her work, this record is equally beautiful and soul-crushing. Yeah, it's really, really incredible. It's probably my favorite album of the year so far. It's April, but I can't imagine anything toppling this. So yeah, Adrian Lenker, Bright Future.
Woo! All right, next time on Freaks and Creeks, the finale of season 2.
Wow!
Titled Parental Discretion Advised.
Hate that title. Yep.
Terrible.
Yep.
As Dawson wrestles with Mr. Potter's drug dealing, Pacey squares off with his dad.
Bum, bum.
I wish
sword fight.
I wish the description was just, as Dawson wrestles with Joey's dad. That's it.
Pro wrestling?
Yeah, that would be so much cooler. Who's the heel? Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, yeah, he's probably the face.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. All right, everybody, thank you all so much for listening to our show. If you've enjoyed it, subscribe to our show and join us as we continue to set sail through Dawson's Creek one episode at a time. If you want more Freaks content, don't visit our website, don't find us on Instagram, and don't write to us at show@freaksandcreeks.com. Certainly don't leave us a review. We don't want them. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
fun.